So I don't really think I have any mysteries to share in what I'm going to say now, but I need to say it anyway, just to speak a little bit about continuing awareness in our life, right? The whole reason I like to teach these styles of retreat is to hopefully get us to trust a little bit in our own experience, to get the sense that this recognizing awareness in this receptive, sometimes open, sometimes precise way in our daily life, is not just some esoteric practice that we cultivate. Sometimes we talk about recognizing awareness, and it can get into very, very refined and subtle spaces. There's no question about that. There's all different levels. But the way we're working with it here, hopefully you're seeing this way of learning to trust and recognize that awareness is available, whatever we're doing, is not esoteric, does not take very special conditions or a very, delicate, concentrated mind. But I want to say two things about that, I think. Sometimes I want to say X number of things, and the number just comes out, and I didn't actually beforehand know how many things I wanted to say. So that just happened. So I think there's two. One is, it's not, as I say, it's not esoteric. It seems very simple and accessible. I hope you see that. But as we continue to trust and take refuge, really, more and more in turning to the awareness side of object awareness, that's always available. The experience, the way we recognize and understand awareness and objects and perception and what we call ourselves gets much, much deeper than we might expect. This is my experience from what seems like a very simple practice. And I'm not going to talk all about that now. It's really just to say there's a lot more going on in this as we cultivate a steady recognition and faith and trust, confidence in awareness, in the willingness to remember steadily. And as we've been talking, sometimes that means bringing steady awareness to difficult experiences, to the kilesas, not just checking out. Really, with this attitude of interest, as I think I quoted from Sadhu Tejaniya yesterday, we're really not trying to make it be a certain way, but we're really interested. Of course, not every moment, but that's kind of like the big picture. Interested to see how the mind works. And as the Buddha said, suffering and freedom arise right here in the mind and heart in this moment, not yesterday, not tomorrow. There's only this moment. This simplicity, but radical nature of this refuge in this simple awareness is one way. One of the keys, the doorways to really strengthening the radical trust in the truth is here in this moment, always in this moment, no matter what's happening in this moment, and it's never anywhere else. As Dogen Zenji said, one of the quotations I really like, if you cannot discover the truth right where you are, where do you expect to find it? So with our awareness, we don't have to get all grandiose. As you've seen, it's just, you're in the garden and you're aware that there's seeing and hearing and sensations. You're not saying all of that, but you recognize that awareness is present. It doesn't seem like anything that special. So this is just really my kind of encouragement, my plea, and why hopefully doing it together over a weekend will just give you a little more, if this is new to you. Something just banging around here. I don't know what. I guess it was the people upstairs. Completely gone. Totally and completely gone. So yes, it doesn't seem like much, but it really, if you trust it and continue to explore, it's a doorway into wisdom and the wisdom of accurate recognition of reality. And that is the wisdom of the Buddha that frees our heart and mind from reliance on the kalesas, from self-centered attitude, from perceiving all of life as if it's from the center of me, you know, as the Dalai Lama is always talking about self-cherishing. Not that we do it on purpose because we're bad, but that's just how we perceive the world. But in a moment of awareness, receiving happiness or fear, the awareness isn't me and the awareness isn't the happiness or the fear. It's receiving it. We start to trust and come more and more from that momentary place of freedom and less from identifying and from whatever particular thing is occurring, which is changing every moment. We stop using every experience and every object as a way to confirm or describe or define ourselves, both for positive and for negative, you know. And not to say that's bad, it's that really, if we had a longer retreat, I'd talk about this more, because it's really fun, it's fun and fascinating to explore as you go through the day how any mundane nothing experience, a sight, a sound, a smell, how, I don't want to give a percentage, 9 times out of 10, more, that immediately comes back to it's all about me. Whatever it is, you know, it's all about me. So we don't even realize how much the mind is doing it. It's such a habit. Well, it is all about me. I'm the one seeing, I'm the one hearing, I'm the one whatever. It's fascinating to explore without making it right or wrong. But without awareness, we can't even notice. It's just how it is. And so this seemingly simple, nothing special practice is really one, you know, it's one of the cultivations of mind as a Buddha. Of course, there's others, but it really can have very profound lead us into very profound understanding of the nature of existence, the nature of suffering, the nature of happiness. So just want to encourage us to have some, if have some commitment to it. So that's the second part I wanted to say. And it came up in some of the questions that even, you know, we think, okay, this is a good thing, you know, and maybe we've even been, you know, studying or practicing it some in our life, but it doesn't just hang around awareness, you know, it doesn't just automatically keep going, right, in our daily life, even on a retreat, right? Never mind in our daily life, in complicated activities. And so, as much as I would say this way of cultivating recognition of awareness is very accessible in our active life, one of the most accessible ways of being present and understanding how the heart and mind are working that I've run into. I mean, I have a limited, but it's been extremely accessible and translatable. And yet, it still requires of us a total commitment. I mean, not that doesn't mean every moment because we space it, but one of the things Sadhu Tejaniya said, one of the first times I heard him giving a little rap at the end of a retreat when people are saying, well, how do I continue? You know, it's hard. And he's going, yeah, it's hard. It's difficult, you know? And there's the only way that we can continue to deepen and develop and have a more and more reliable, natural awareness is that it is important to us. Only we, each of us, can have the intention, can cultivate the intention. And he says, you know, if the times when there's awareness in your mind and heart and the times when they're not, if it isn't, doesn't really make any difference to you, of course you're not going to keep on doing it. And maybe it doesn't. Look and see for yourself. But if you have discovered that the times when awareness is available is really, whatever word you want to use, it sounds like prep, you like it better, or you see it's more wise, or it's more freeing, or whatever, then consciously to yourself, we each have to say, okay, that's important to me. And that becomes, well, we have to keep reaffirming it. Nothing's a one-time thing. But that sense of importance, that sense of commitment, it's really just another way of saying consciously taking refuge in the Dhamma, consciously taking refuge in awakening. And as any of you, many of you have been practicing a long time, you know, that's not something we do once and then it just carries on through. You know, the world and what we call samsara, the world of gratification and frustration, you know, leading on, come, 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 you know, come and you'll be happy, come do this, get rid of that, everything will be copacetic, you know. That world is coming in through our sense doors all the time. And as profound an appreciation as I might have in any moment of the power of awareness, of the depth of the Dhamma and the freeing nature of the Dhamma and the unreliability of this, you know, calling of how coming for pleasure and making everything okay, what we call samsara, but that's right here. They're not two separate places. Ajahn Sumedho had a nice line. He said, samsara and nibbana are not places we go to. They're modes of perception. Samsara is the mode of perception of at any of our six sense doors through the lens of me, me, and wanting. Nibbana is mode of perception, you could say, I'm saying this now, of awareness free from kalesa, free from self-referencing. That's all. It's the same stuff coming in through the sense doors. So as deep as my appreciation might be of the power of awakening and the unreliability and ultimate unsatisfactory nature of the world and life when I'm looking through the lens of meing and mying, that's also momentary, that deep understanding, everything's momentary. And that's why our commitment, we need to keep refreshing it. I'm saying this not to be discouraging, I'm saying it to be realistic. Because when people have strong experiences on or off retreat, really deep understanding, and the next day, or if it's a really strong insight, it might be weeks, it might be a year, you really feel like this is it. But the habits of wanting and aversion, they come kind of creeping back in or flooding back in. And if we've been unrealistically expecting, I got it now, it should be easy because I see how important it is, then when we turn around from a great insight and are craving something silly in the next moment, it's easy to get completely discouraged. So I'm trying to tell you this to be realistic. This is our lifetime path. I don't mean just this style of practice, that's a choice, but I mean our practice of awakening, of Buddha, really all the different ways the Buddha taught are ultimately about purifying the heart and mind, shifting the habits from running on the kalesas to the wholesome, to the beautiful. And what really the major shifting function is wisdom. And that's what this bhavana, this awareness can guide us to. So it's a lifetime. It's our lifetime project. And there'll be times we're discouraged and all of that. But with this awareness, okay, totally discouraged, can spin in that story, and no matter how deep I've spun in it, there can be a moment where, discouragement is like this. Awareness is always available when we remember. So our practice really, if it's important to one, to just keep finding ways to help us remember. You know, and the more we do it, the more it becomes a habit, and that's lovely. It gets easier because we're practicing it more. And when I am aware, it's like, oh yeah, right. As I said, there's that kind of relief. So I'm certainly not aware all the time. And there's a kind of, but much more frequently, there's a kind of sort of awareness. That's not good enough, but it's more than nothing. And I don't think there's that many times when there's absolutely no awareness. Because there can be awareness that you're kind of lost. There can be. You're all caught up, but there's kind of an awareness of that. Awareness can be with anything, anything, no matter. It's the identification with the experience that makes it seem like there can't be awareness. It's not the experience. I didn't mean to get into all of that. I was just trying to give some tips. I didn't get to the tips. If it's of value to us and we want to continue practicing in this style, any style, but we're talking about this one, just see to yourself, acknowledge to yourself, yes, it's important. And then we each find ways to help us remember. Of course, if you sit some in the day or do walking meditation, that can be a helpful way to remember awareness. That helps me, but it doesn't have to just be that. It's anything. Like we talked earlier, where someone said, Shui Yumin Sayadaw just would tap his finger on a table when he was talking, which has helped him stay mindful of talking. Sometimes when I'm in a meeting, I'll just have mala beads in my hand, you know, and just kind of do it. It just kind of keeps me somewhat aware that I'm listening and speaking until they start spinning and I start waking and then I've lost the awareness, but then it comes back. Finding ways to help you remember. Utejaniya putting the inhaler up his nose. And then the awareness starts to spread out, you know. One moment of awareness, the next moment's more possible. So just, and finding for yourself what helps inspire you to remember not only awareness, but the whole Dhamma in your daily life. Whatever it is, you know, we need help and support. It's not like we should do it all alone. So all kinds of little reminders, whatever it might be. Like some people listen to certain chanting in the morning and that kind of, it's like, turns the mind to the Dhamma. Just to turn the mind to the Dhamma, it's just such a little turn, but it makes so much difference, you know? And it continues to amaze me after all these years. As soon as I turn the mind to the Dhamma, whatever's going on, it's like, oh, right, you know, it's so important. Not like in an intellectual way, but just coming out of, I want this, I don't want that, I've got to do this. And, oh yeah, right, just here. And the next thing I need to do arises by itself. What amazes me is how I know that 10 million times. It's always a relief when I land here again. And how seductive, how easily the call of being in a hurry or doing this or getting something or making the list and getting into this go-go mode or wanting or aversion, whatever it is, how seductive that is. And then that all seems so real again. And then the thought of just to sit down for 5 minutes, which once you do it is great. But have you noticed the thought, no, I don't want to sit down. You know, the mind is like into the samsara mode. No, sit down, I'm busy. So just go forward, go forward, go forward. It's amazing. And half the time I don't sit down. Then sometimes I do sit down. You know, I take 2 breaths. I'm just sitting. Oh, yeah, right. What was the problem? It's so amazing. So with this awareness practice, you're not taking any of that personally. We're coming to understand how we get lost in Kalesa, how we can reconnect with awareness and Dhamma. Just like this, always available. So find what helps you. I started putting different photographs of different teachers or beings around that inspire me. That's one of the reasons I like, you know, pictures of the Buddha, or I have. I'll just show you since it's on my desk. In Burma, where I go to Burma every year, I guess not this year, and they have these little figurines, well, they used to, old days, of nuns and monks. So this is a little Burmese nun, one of the little figurines that I really like. So I have a whole bunch of them, but I really like this one. So I just have her sitting there. It reminds me, because the faith of a lot of the nuns in Burma, they do Buddha Nupassana practice, which is remembering and contemplating the qualities of a Buddha. Now, for me, that's not the practice that lights me up, really. But the nuns that I know that do it, their faith is get so strong, it lights them up, and being around them, that faith inspires me. So that's what inspires me when I see this, not that practice, but the faith. And we catch that from each other. And find what in your life. You're all been here this whole weekend. Most of you, if not all, have done other practice before. So you probably already know. Maybe you've already done this. If not, reflect on what inspires you and use it, you know. Use it to remember. Use it just to, you know, remember, okay, I'm caught in all this stuff right now, but all right, this is also true for me. This is also important. So it's just being practical. Not expecting that somehow magically awareness is just going to flow. The Dhamma is just going to take over. And now it's easy from now on. It gets easier because we trust it more. But this is how it is. So seeing things as they are, as a function of wisdom. And so awareness, this style of awareness practice, sati, samadhi, panya. So I hope you've seen, it's not just to be aware, but it's really in the service of the of setting the conditions for the clear mind of wisdom to arise, just recognizing accurately without the lens of meing, of wanting, of aversion. And then the real trust that it's not an act of personal will, that with wisdom and accurate recognition, the wholesome, beautiful qualities get strengthened. And the reliance on the difficult, on greed, aversion, confusion, the reliance on those is not being fed, is weakening as we go. So that's really what this practice is about. It's not just like something to feel good as we're going along, but luckily it helps us be more present with more balance and less suffering in whatever particular experience life is arising for us right now. It doesn't stop unpleasant things from happening. Even awakening doesn't stop unpleasant things from happening. Certainly, awareness practice and concentration and wisdom don't stop unpleasant things from happening. But with the wisdom, the response of our heart and mind to unpleasant things is much more appropriate. So something difficult arises, we don't get lost in aversion and blaming others or ourselves. And that's the suffering the Buddha's teaching can free us from. So yeah, just find for yourself, is there an interest in continuing and cultivating, letting awareness become more natural? And then just get interested in what supports it. Don't be judging yourself about it. Don't set some goal how it should be. Don't berate yourself when, you know, you've lost it for 2 minutes, or like someone said at the end of the day, I could have done better. We could always do better. Throw that one out the window. You couldn't have done better because you could only do what you did. It's over. We couldn't change the past. As Jack Kornfield always says, give up all hope of a better past. At the end of the day that happened is past. It's how it is. There's only this moment. Trusting that. And just the other piece I wanted to mention, of course, in terms of the whole Buddha's path, not only the awareness practice, bhavana, mental cultivation, leading to wisdom, very powerful aspect. But everything the Buddha taught, in my opinion, is in the service of this purifying the habits of our heart and mind. Awareness, wisdom might be the strongest way that really cuts through. When there's deep, deep wisdom, it really cuts through. It really is transformative. But the practices of generosity and of sila, of non-harming behavior, of speech and body, they are also ways of living our life with awareness, because you need awareness for both of those, that in themselves are shifting or changing these habits of our heart and mind. It's not just that we do, you know, we do non-harming behaviors so we can have better meditation. It's because if we really are setting our life in the crucible of awakening, in the crucible of Dhamma, every moment, any moment, I mean, we'll forget, but any moment of our life is the moment of practice. Everything that occurs in our life is an aspect that can be used for understanding and for purifying. So there's times when, you know, we're just so caught up, awareness, you can't seem to get there, but the potential of non-harming is there. You see your mind going to say something negative, but there's enough knowing that you feel, like someone said, they felt themselves come up against, about to act in an unwholesome way. So the mind's in an unwholesome state, but actually moving into speech or action takes a bit more energy. And so when we're paying enough attention and we actually refrain from saying that unwholesome thing, that's powerful. That is changing the habit. That's actually a movement of purifying the habits of heart and mind. So working with sila, with, you know, non-harming behavior, not killing, not stealing, not harming ourselves or others with our sexual energy, with speech, not lying or using harsh or divisive speech, and not using drugs or intoxicants to cloud and confuse our heart and mind. And these aren't like vow. If it was just a vow, you break it and you're out. That's not what it's about. It's about, it turns our attention, our awareness into how we're living, how we're speaking, how we're acting. Right away with awareness, there's sensitivity, there's connectedness. There's really becomes so obvious that if I say or do something that harms you, if I'm aware, if I'm paying attention, it harms me. You know, I say something unpleasant, aversive, I really feel it, and probably for a lot longer than the person I said it to. They've forgotten it. I'm lying awake at night feeling it reverberate, you know. Sayadaw Upandita used to say that following the precepts, acting from non-harming behavior, is a way of actualizing the oneness of all beings. You might not expect to hear him talk like that, but it's really true. So it's not just something we do so we can get something better. It's a practice of awakening, of clear recognition, and of non-harming of self and other. I read something, Ajahn Sumedho. You know who Ajahn Sumedho is? He's a Thai monk, Ajahn, American guy, but he's been a monk for something, I don't know, 40 years, 45 years, whatever. I love listening to him. And now, of course, I can't. Oh, he said, he was talking about right speech in this context. And he said, after all these years as a monk, and they have even stronger rules, I think of the joy I take in all of the things that I never said. I really like that. That he may have 40 years of all the junk he never said. And appreciating it, that's actually a wholesome thing. Appreciating your wholesome actions, appreciating your goodness is something that the Buddha advises as a way of brightening the heart and mind, as a way of bringing in wholesome. So just as with sila, or non-harming behavior, so also with generosity, it's not about the thing or giving things, it's the movement, the intention in the mind, in the heart, of letting go, of being generous, whether it's things or your time or your caring, whatever. It's not about the what. It's the, you could give a lot and not be generous. If the heart is in contraction and I'm giving in order so that people will like me, that's not the intention of generosity. You can feel the difference. Generosity is, again, it actualizes the sense of oneness because there's an openness, a giving, that the intention of generosity in the heart is a happy one. It's happiness producing because it's wholesome. And then there's the offering. And if the person receives it in an open way, there's kind of like a mutuality that we really can see. And so this may not be so Western, but you really get that in countries where that I've been in, which is mostly Thailand and Burma, where Buddhism is the main religion, not the only. And where, as with all organized religions, there's a lot of just, you know, stuff and ritual that's not heartfelt. But there's many, many people who are practicing it in a very heartfelt way. And the sense of generosity in Burma is something that's often said as, oh, an opportunity for Dana. That's like a happy thought. Oh, this is an opportunity for Dana. It's not really the same here. I've been getting 7,000 emails a day, right? An opportunity for Dana to this political figure, to that political figure. It's a different feeling over here. But when something is given in Burma, when someone gives, the reception is really open, but there's also this joy that the giver feels to see you receive it, but they also are appreciating the wholesomeness of their own generosity. And that's something I think I never got that over here in the West. It's kind of missed. That would seem like, well, that's just being self-interested. You talk about not self-cherishing, but you're thinking, wow, you're giving, and you're thinking how generous you are. No, not like I'm so great, that is. But the sense of feeling the goodness when you offer something, it fills you up. It's inspiring. When we offer the merit at the end of a sitting, why I do it, it's like, fill yourself up with, wow, this meditating, my intention, it's really wholesome. It brightens the heart and mind, and taking that wholesomeness and then sharing it out is a beautiful thing. There's one sutta I quote a lot of the Buddha. It's long, but I'll just say in reference to dana and sila. He goes into other things, but he's talking to a householder who's basically saying, you know, in the household life is dusty and busy. That's how they always describe it. I guess in India, it really is dusty, literally. But unless it's muddy, it depends on the time of year. But you know, we can't look at all this esoteric stuff. These are my words. So he's giving this guy some different things to do. Two of them are, he said, when your mind is all caught up, right? When you're not quite able to practice awareness, my language, but that's what he's saying. Reflect on your own generosity. Reflect on your past acts of generosity and all your motivations of generosity, on the fact that living a household life, you're a generous person. Reflect on that. And then he says the same thing for moral conduct, for conscious conduct. He said, reflect on when your mind can't go straight, you're all caught up. Reflect on all your non-harming conduct. We tend to do, well, maybe you don't think, well, okay, I did that non-harming thing. I refrained from that. But what about all those times I did this and this and this and this that was bad? And somehow we think that's more real. We should focus on the negative. But remember, what are we trying? What's being fed? And what's being starved in the mind stream? So I think about all the times I refrain from saying something harmful, all the times that I refrain from, you know, I just took a little care and didn't step on the ant. And then the mind comes in, big deal, you didn't step on the ant. What do you think? Don't make yourself a big. So what's being fed in both of those? When I'm really reflecting on the restraint, feel a sense of brightness, of lightness. Oh yeah, that feels, you can feel the connectedness, the up. When I go into, oh, but you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you could be so much better, I could have done better. What's being strengthened in the mind then? Look in your own mind and see, in my, it's negativity. And it's also increasing the sense of self. I am so bad. Just not judging that, but really looking and seeing, and this takes us back to the awareness practice. what habits of mind are being fed? What habits of mind are being starved? That's the Buddha's language. So anyway, he says to this layman, so reflect on your generous actions. Reflect on your conscious conduct, your non-harming actions. And he said, and this reflection you can do, I don't remember the specifics, it's like when you're standing, when you're walking, when you're working, whatever you're doing, when you're in your home crowded with children. I know it says that. So he's basically saying you can do that anytime. So you can't even get yourself to sit down for 3 minutes and recognize awareness again. You got to rush out to the car and do whatever. But even doing that, one could reflect on one's generous past actions. One could reflect on one's wholesome conduct. And the Buddha says, when that's filling the heart mind, at that time, the heart mind goes straight. It's focused on the Dhamma. At that time, the mind is not filled with greed. It's not filled with aversion. It's not filled with confusion. So that, I'm just offering that as another possibility, but all these kinds of ways to tune into the wholesome, to really feed and uplift the wholesome, and then let that inspire us to continue in our practice of awareness and wisdom. So finding whatever can support you in that, in your life, if that's what you choose to do. I think that's all I wanted to say about that.